Pauling. Thank you. Call to order the Oceano Community Service District Board of Directors regular meeting for Wednesday, July 11th, 2018. Have a roll call, please.
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Colwell?
Here.
Vice President Austin?
Here.
President White?
Here. Would you please stand for the flag salute? Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Moving on to agenda review. Do we have any? I see some amendment or modifications here. Ms. Casiola?
President White, members of the board, we have modified our agenda item 8B. We have provided a modified staff report with the updated check sequence since the three checks sent to the county were voided with the help of Director Angelo and President White early Monday morning. So thank you again for being so responsive, especially for a Monday morning. And the fees associated with voiding these checks will be a total of $105 on our end, and the county will let us know how much it'll be on their end, and we will report back to you with that total. This adjustment will not adjust the total cash disbursements today, but only the check sequence reported to you on your posted agenda and sent to you. So at the appropriate time, the recommendations would be for the approval of staff recommendations in 8B with the modified staff report.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Entertain the motion.
I move that we approve the agenda with the modification of the warrants.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 4-0. We have no closed session, so we'll move on to, and I forgot my glasses again, public comment for items not in the agenda. This public comment period provides the opportunity for members of the public to address the board on matters of interest within the jurisdiction of the district that are not listed on the agenda. If a member of the public wishes to speak at this time, public comment is limited to 3 minutes. And I have two comment slips. Cynthia Rapoli?
That's for 9A.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's for 9A. Anybody have any open comments?
Hi,
good
I'm
evening.
David Cardwell, representing the place. Darcy Battiali couldn't be here this evening. He's installing a major piece of ceramics. This is just a very brief message. Wanted to appreciate the meeting that we had yesterday that was clarifying. And I've got good news that we are our 501(c) regarding the firehouse project, the potential firehouse project, is approximately 60 to 90 days out. But we have, in the last 48 hours, been approached by... we have been promised financial support for initial engineering and architecture for the initial, for the things that we were discussing in the meeting. So we are in a good mood, and we are going to keep moving forward, and we look forward to giving you one progress report after another. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great.
Anyone else?
This is public comment, right? Not on the agenda?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Shirley Gibson Halcyon. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the last meeting and the agenda, and because I read it mostly online, and I just wanted to compliment staff or Carrie or whoever put the website together, because I was looking at the budget and it was just laid out really simply, and there were even pictures to make it not seem so boring. And so I kind of appreciated that. And then I looked at it some more, and, you know, everything is so precise and meticulous, and I thought then that I'm never going to let Pavel look at my checkbook. So And then the other thing I wanted to mention, I really liked how the options for the fire authority, that you laid that out so simply, like, here's the 8 options, and then kind of went into a little bit of detail. Because I think for a lot of people, it's real nebulous what is going on and, you know, what is this city or that city. And so I was having a big debate with somebody I went to high school with, and he wanted everybody to go back to their own, having their own fire department. You know, he just liked that old-fashioned idea. But I had my papers with me, and I went to the handy-dandy sheet, and it said option 2, that Oceano can only afford the 2-man crew. And so I was wondering if that could be put on the website to kind of give people, you know, like action plan for fire authority and kind of like a timeline and then these 8 options. So if somebody is just really curious, at least they know what we're looking at and as far as our community. So I just thought that might be able something that you can add. And I think it really helped me understand what the options are. You know, and I, when we had this debate, friendly debate, you know, I said, well, I think we're going to pay one way or another. So all things being equal, you know, I'd rather keep control if that's possible. So anyway, just some ideas. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else on items not on the agenda? Come forward. Yeah.
Hello. My name is Aline Villa, and I'm here to speak on line A, the vacancy position. And I just want...
That is on the agenda for later.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you can... We'll give you time to speak on that later. Thank you. Anyone else? Moving on. Item 7, special presentations and reports. And we have public comment after that, correct? Yeah, okay. Calling up Mr. Maraschino. Oh, yeah, let's let the sheriff's department go first. You're not. We're just concerned about our taxpayers' money. No. You'd like to come forward?
Good evening. My name is Jeff Nichols. I'm a sergeant here at the Sheriff's South Station in Oceano, and I'm standing in for Commander McDonald, who's actually out of state at the moment. So I would like to give you some general statistics about the month of June in Oceano, and please feel free to ask any questions at the conclusion of the information that I'm about to provide to you. So just some general statistics for Oceano. Our deputies conducted 147 traffic stops in the greater Oceano area in the month of June. So they're staying very active on the violators, speeders, criminal element traveling through town. We had 5 reported vandalisms in Oceano. Most of those were vehicle-related vandalisms, and those could have been associated with domestic disturbances and things like that. So they're a little bit nonspecific. We had about 12 trespassing calls, which is a little higher than normal, but it has to do with school being out. So we have more kids running around town and no place to go. And so a lot of those trespassing calls had to do with the school in the school grounds and late at night and things like that. We had a total of 15 theft-related reports in June. Those could be anywhere from petty theft of an item from a vehicle, anything under $950, to grand theft, anything over $950, That also includes 8 burglary reports, and not to confuse you with the term burglary, burglary can occur from a vehicle or from a house depending if the car's locked or not. And I don't have any way of differentiating those. I know we haven't had any, I'm not aware of any residential burglaries other than what's been occurring on Strand Way, which is something else that I'll touch on here momentarily. We had one reported robbery, which by definition is taking the property from another person by means of force or fear. So it could have been somebody who walked up and said, give me your wallet or I'm going to hit you. That would constitute a robbery. We only had one runaway juvenile, which is dramatic considering school's out and kids don't want to be home. We had 2 public intoxication arrests. We had 4 calls for service regarding transient activity. I actually responded to a call at the Coastal Dunes down here, report of male and female using the shower together that didn't reside there. Subsequently, arrested the male for drug-related charges. The female was let go, but she was also a bad character, but happened to be not doing anything bad at the time. So I would include that activity in the transient calls, which isn't necessarily reflected in the 4 that we had. We had 22 narcotics-related arrests in June, and these people are taken into custody for possession of something other than marijuana. Typically, heroin seems to be on the rise, and it seems to be a trend countywide. We're seeing a lot more of it around town, both here and in Napomo. A lot of it has to do with the lack of access to opiate-based painkillers for some of these drug seekers who choose to abuse those narcotics. There's a lot stricter limitations now on prescriptions on controlled substances. It's harder for them to get it. So people are resorting to heroin, which is cheaper. So subsequently, we're finding a lot more people using heroin and being contacted with heroin, which in itself is scary. It's highly addictive and leads to a lifetime of usually theft and overdoses. We did contact one person who we would consider transient, who does occupy a motorhome on occasion within Oceano. Actually was in possession of methamphetamine and fentanyl. Fentanyl is extremely dangerous, so much so that we don't even handle it. We have to wear masks and gloves to even handle the packaging because fentanyl can be absorbed through the skin, so it's very dangerous. We've heard about this happening in other jurisdictions. Well, it's here in this county, and it's starting to show up. You know, fentanyl is hundreds of times more potent than heroin. And it's very dangerous and can be absorbed through the skin. So I would just caution everybody, if you know anybody that ever comes across a suspected illegal substance and it's powdery in nature, please don't touch it, don't move it. You know, call law enforcement and we'll come and take care of it to avoid any exposure. So we had one reported sexual assault. We had 5 domestic violence cases. And 1 case involving assault with a deadly weapon. So generally speaking, it may sound like a lot, and that's just an oversimplified summary of the calls, the major calls for service that we had in the area. It didn't seem very active. It was actually busier in Napomo than Oceano for the month of June. So to go back and address some of the theft-related calls, we're well aware of the theft that's been occurring, particularly on Strand and the areas associated with Strandway. In our efforts to make sure we keep the levee clear, whatever transient populations that was occupying the levee that we cleaned out last fall obviously have relocated to other places onto state park property. So typically, we believe that a lot of them are staying in the areas where the creek empties into the ocean over on state park property, which is relatively close in proximity to the end of Strand Way. And so subsequently, I think Strand Way is being used as a thoroughfare for some of the transients that are coming to and from wherever it is that they're staying. And with that comes crimes of opportunity. So if they're walking up and down Strand at night, in the middle of the night, and they see something sitting out open, they're going to take it. We did have one burglary that occurred from an occupied house two nights ago on Strand. People were staying there. They are apparently long-term visitors of the area. And somebody was sleeping in a tent on the patio outside the sliding glass door. And a person walked up to by the tent. The person in the tent saw the shadow, thought it was somebody from inside, didn't think twice about it. So somebody was actually so brazen as they walked in the slider past the tent into the house and stole a handbag and some contents that went along with it. I've instructed all my deputies to give every bit of extra time to extra patrol in those areas late at night, especially between 2 and 5 in the morning when a lot of this stuff is probably happening. I've talked to folks within our department, and we're going to see if we can do kind of some kind of public service announcement at the very least on our Facebook page to make people aware. Keep your vehicles locked. Do not keep valuables in plain sight. Please make sure you lock your residences at night and things like that. Give them some general safety tips to try to keep them from being victimized in the community, because most of these people are visitors to our area, especially over there, and we don't want our people vacationing here to become victims all the time, and we want them to keep coming here. So 4th of July, I'm sure that's a hot topic as well. I can't tell you the strides that I personally went to try to make sure this was a safe 4th of July. We get a very high volume of complaints about the illegal fireworks. We're well aware of it. I think people see us come in the station and set something off, and the minute I go inside, I can hear it go off. Problem is we have to observe these crimes occurring to take action. We have to know where it's coming from to take action. And it's literally a cat and mouse game all the time. We actually paid deputies for two nights over the weekend leading up to the 4th to drive around undercover in an unmarked car to try to catch violators. I was one of them. So we didn't catch anybody with all those efforts. I brought Cal Fire in, their fire investigators, law enforcement personnel to ride with us. We were unable to catch anybody. I can say that it was uncharacteristically light in the amount of fireworks that were occurring around town compared to years past. I don't know if that's any great thing to be happy about, but honestly, it was the quietest 4th of July that I have heard in years in town. We would like to see people not do it at all. But it is in the forefront of our mind, and we're trying to do something about it. And we sent out a public service announcement probably 2-3 days before 4th of July, trying to get people to understand the dangers and the illegality around airborne fireworks. So we're working on it, and we're acutely aware of it. So that's about it. And I would open it up to any questions that anybody has.
I don't really have a question, but really appreciate your special attention in the Strand area, because there are a lot of long-term elderly, often widows, who get frightened about this activity. So thank you for that.
You're welcome, and we certainly will pay close attention to it moving forward. Not that we haven't already, but and it's difficult to try to be everywhere all at once, but I have directed my guys to make sure they give that area some special attention late at night. So
Thank you very much.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
You're
thank
welcome.
You. Thank you.
Now, Tony Maricino, you can be next, please.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino. All right, for the past couple weeks, we've had our weekly samples, 7 work orders, 18 USAs, 5 customer service calls, 1 after-hours call-out. I'll cover that later. Lopez is currently at 48.1%, which is 23,759 acre-feet. We're still continuing to take no state water. Lopez has delivered year-to-date from April 131 acre-feet, and we've pumped 58 acre-feet to make up the difference. We did have 1 SSO last month, and that SSO consists of Air Park Bridge. It was after hours after we were off work. It happened about 5:19, 5:15, and the lead construction company out there on the bridge took out our force main a little bit, cracked it, and the responding operator was Casey and Jason, and they did everything down to the T with notifications with Cal OES, County, Environmental Health. I arrived a few hours later. I was off that day, but I still arrived, and everything went as well as it could for us doing the reporting. It was contained because the bridge was dammed for dewatering, so it was contained within the dewatering area. Samples were done. The responsible party and the county did the sampling, and they're still in contact with the Regional Water Control Board on the issues that are happening, and we did report the SSO, and it will get final tomorrow, and we will go over with the general manager to make sure everything was done per policy, per the SSMP. But I give credit to Casey and Jason for doing all the initial calls, and it went as smooth as it could for the district. Besides that, we've met to start the hazard mitigation plan. We cleaned the lift station, installed a few hydrants on pier that have been hit in the past. We did a 4th of July cleanup on July 5th. That went really well. We completely filled up the dump truck quite a bit. People out there that are cleaning, we just gave them bags. We helped out also. A lot of trash. It was really good. Common codes for meter reads. It was personal common codes wherever we had to clean up around hydrants, vegetation. We had 2 of our boosters go down. Actually, one of the boosters, the relay, if it left in auto, it trips. So we have to leave it in hand because the BFD has a booster on the BFD. There's a rubber coupling that's designed to break if the impeller in the volute sees up, and that's what happened. So we got people coming out to fix that. They've already came out, got the parts on order. Weed abatement, hydrant meters for developers. We got a lot of developing going on right now. State reports, and we're still continuing to jet. Any questions?
Where was the booster pump? Where's the booster?
So we have a booster station at the yard. We have 3 boosters.
Yard. Okay,
yes.
At the yard. Yeah. Okay, I understand now. Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Anyone else?
No. Easy done.
Thank you very much, and thank you for our handling our SS.
Sewer system overflow,
yeah,
SSO.
I saw, I want to commend you and the boys, too. They did a really good job. I was watching them. I called you because I saw all the activity, and I knew there was something with the SSO.
And they also took care of that the berry that the delineation had been moved.
Right.
And then they removed it. Yes.
Right. Thank you.
And everything's been reinstalled since then.
Right.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes. Mr. Ogren, I believe you're next.
Madam President, members of the board, item 9C, I believe, has got a lot more updates in terms of recent work efforts, so I'll keep my comments here pretty brief. In following up on Tony's comments regarding July 5th. A number of us went out and hit the streets in order to help clean up fireworks. One of the notable items that when Kara and I went by the park at the lagoon, county park at the lagoon, and there are literally no fireworks anywhere because whoever been there had picked them all, bagged them, put them on the curb for us, so we were able to just swing by, pick them up, and move on. But again, it was a good work effort on the 5th, the morning of the 5th, and as Tony had mentioned, basically we filled up the dump truck with spent fireworks. Most recently today, I met with the Zone 3 Technical Advisory Committee, where the updates to the low reservoir response plan are taking shape. It will be on a board agenda in the near future. We still have a little bit more work to do on that, but again, it's been progressing pretty well. And then the Zone 3 contract amendments, which have been discussed on and off for the last several years, will appear to be picking up some steam behind that work effort as well. So those conclude my remarks, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, any questions? We'll probably have some later. Yeah. Moving on to director reports. Director Angelo?
I have nothing.
Director Coldwell?
Yesterday I attended the SWSAC, which is the State Water Subcontractors Advisory Committee. So this is concerning state water. By design, we are not taking advantage of state water thus far this year. And that's primarily to manage our water systems with an eye toward economy. It was really interesting because some of the people at the meeting yesterday were more inquiring than giving information about water storage. They want to see if the water that's in reserve could be stored somewhere other than the San Luis Reservoir. And it's a great idea, and something may come of it. It's too early to tell. We all may be aware of the possibility of the California Water Fix. That's the proposal of building either one or two tunnels under the Sacramento River in the Delta area near Sacramento, and a very expensive project. I think San Luis County has about 0.6% interest financially in that, which amounts to about $68 million. So you can imagine the billions that is being looked at for this project. That's about it. There's some discussions about the water allocations. It looks like that's pretty stable. No one saw that changing, really. So, yep, that's the State Water Subcontractor Advisory Committee.
Where is that meeting? Where do you have that meeting?
At the County Library in San Luis.
Linda?
Well, our sanitation district was canceled due to the 4th of July, so we did not have a meeting. And I just see our Oceana Advisory on the 23rd, Supervisor Compton will be at the meeting, so to talk to us and see, give us some updates on everything that's going on. So I'd like to announce that, and that's it.
Okay, and I really wasn't at any meetings either. So I'll just go on to public comment on our presentations. Anybody want to make any public comments? Seeing no one come forward, we will move to 8A, a consent agenda. Entertain a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
Oh, Madam President,
Public comment on the consent agenda.
I was doing so well. Public comment on our consent agenda. Seeing no one come forward, I will now ask for a motion.
Can I make a motion that we approve the consent agenda with the correction to the cash disbursements, the revised cash disbursements?
A second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries 4-0. Okay. Moving on to business items. Do we want to do public comment first or last?
I would recommend we
do each one.
Yeah, do each one and take public comment.
Okay. After.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. 9A, consideration of whether to fill a vacancy of the Board of Directors by appointment until a person elected in November 2018 election to fill a vacancy can be qualified.
I have something to say in this regard.
Feel free.
I spoke with our general manager, Mr. Ogren, this afternoon, and I am going to be resigning from the board effective tonight. I cannot do so without being grateful and thankful for the community of Oceano. I've also come to respect and enjoy the board and the staff. Oceano can be really proud of the staff here. Mr. Ogren, I thought, was brave this afternoon when we were talking. He flat out asked me if it was because of something that he did. Wow, what an opening! I told Paavo, the more I got to know him, the more I respected him. And you don't always get to say that about people. With my resignation here, I'm going to be spending much more time with family and personal recreation. And I'm really looking forward to it. And I know this board will be able to find people on this item where they need to ferret out and either make an appointment or submit it for public education. And I'm very confident in that. They'll do a good job with it. So thanks.
Okay, that's not a good way to start the day. You don't mind me saying so? I way enjoyed your company.
Well, thank
yes.
you, Karen.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so now we have. Is his resignation within the same time as the other resignation, so we have the same rules and regulations, or is it different?
It is different. And, you know, after today's meeting, obviously, Director Colwell and I just talked a couple hours ago. I appreciate your comments, Jim, and certainly you're going to be missed on the board, and I know that both myself and our staff have all discussed it in the last hour or so, and we really appreciate the camaraderie and the work that we've done with you for the last couple years.
Yeah, thanks.
So my understanding right now is that, and we did the calculations, it's 118 days before the general election, and because it's less than 130 days, then your board will be in a position to provide for the permanent replacement of Director Colwell through the end of his term. The second position, which is the resignation of Director Brunet, is going to be on the November ballot. But your board does have the option of appointing somebody on an interim basis for that position. But given the fact that Director Colwell's position is to be replaced by you, or if you don't, then my understanding is the Board of Supervisors would do so. My recommendation at this time is that we need to proceed with the postings, and we need to proceed with soliciting individuals who may be interested in filling the vacancies. Once legal counsel gets back next week, I can confirm with him. You can't take that action at your next meeting because there's a minimum 15-day posting requirement, and the next meeting is obviously 14 days away. So when legal counsel returns, I can confirm with him, you know, the various details, because they may be go beyond what we reviewed associated with Director Brunet. But my recommendation is that we do proceed with the posting of the vacancies as soon as possible. And then I believe that what we should do is schedule a special meeting, because your board will need to consider whether you still want to do the appointment of the interim, and that's going to in part be dependent on who may be interested in the position in the vacancies. But we get the posting out as soon as legal counsel comes back, and then we schedule a special meeting, you know, after the 15-day posting period. My thoughts are, at that point in time, the individuals who indicate interest and, you know, submit something in writing as far as their interest could come and talk to your board about why they're interested in the appointments, but then that you defer the actual appointments until your August 8th regular meeting, in part because you're going to have a lot of consideration on your shoulders, and to receive the information from potential board members and to listen to why they want to be on the board, rather than making a decision that night, you know, to be able to consider everything that you've heard and then come back at the next regular meeting to make your decisions would be the direction that I would recommend at this time. And again, it's all subject to final confirmation with legal counsel.
Yeah. Is there a possibility we could at least make the decision tonight whether we desire to fill Andrew's term for the short term? We could make that decision tonight.
Certainly, that is the original intent of the agenda item, and that is something that's available for you to do.
Okay.
So, can I
say? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So, Andrew's seat, we can wait till the election.
Yeah, Andrew's seat will be on the election.
Okay.
And so then you have a choice whether you make it tonight or at a subsequent meeting. But there's a relatively short timetable there. Do you want to appoint somebody on an interim basis? And that person would basically be seated and then have the appointment until the first meeting in December. And the first meeting in December is usually when new board members who are elected are appointed. I mean, are sworn in.
But we definitely will fill Mr. Colwell's seat.
Yeah, in my quick reading of the statutes, which again has to be subject to legal counsel's confirmation, is that you could call for a special election, but it wouldn't be part of the general election, which means Oceana would pay for it on its own, and it would be cumbersome given the timing. Or you make the appointment within 60 days. Lacking an appointment within 60 days, then my understanding is the County Board of Supervisors would have the option of making the appointment. But, you know, obviously the first order of business is replacement of Director Colwell's seat.
Well, looking at the 2018 committees and subject matter assignment sheets and realizing there's only going to be, if we don't take some action, there'll only be three of us here. I would recommend that we fill Brene's seat temporarily and then move ahead and as soon as legally possible make steps to fill both seats is what I would support, but I don't know. What does anybody else think?
Well, I would support that we definitely fill Jim's seat. I was thinking wait till the election on the other seat, because how long would it, you said if we were to, for all the notices and everything we need to do, how long would it be? When will you fill that seat?
Well, it seems to me that you could fill it at your regular meeting of August 8th or potentially earlier at a special meeting.
August, September, October, November.
Okay, so that's
4 months. I'm sorry. That would only be 4 months. That would be a four-month term.
So we would fill it by August 8th?
We could. Yeah, I think that's feasible, yes.
Okay. So then we went September, October. Okay, so I was thinking it would go on longer than that, and it would be more wise to wait, but maybe it would be better to
Well, and after public comment, my thought is that if your board was firm that you did not want to fill Andrew's position, appoint on an interim basis, that would be good to know tonight. Versus you could still leave that question open until you've heard from interested candidates. And so if you absolutely don't want to fill it on an interim basis, it'd be good to hear tonight. If you want to leave the question open, then you can leave it open.
So then the person who would, the interim, would apply to run then?
I would anticipate that a person who got it appointed on an interim would also then run for the office in November.
Do we want to listen to public?
Let's do public comment.
Yes, they'll do public comment on this. And Cynthia, let's start with you.
Cynthia Replical, president of the Oceano Beach Community Association. First, let me say, Mr. Colwell, we're sorry to see you go. Thank you for your service. I did want to say that regarding Mr. Brunet's seat, at our last meeting, the Oceano Beach Community Association voted unanimously to request that you fill the vacancy on the board by appointment. Most obviously, there is no way to break a tie with an even number of directors, although now you're only going to have three for at least a time. More importantly, there are too many important issues currently confronting Oceano to leave a seat open for 5 months from the time he resigned until the newly elected director can be seated in December. The Five Cities Fire Authority, Local Hazard Mitigation Plan, Water Resource Planning, revitalization efforts, community outreach, more. You know there's a lot on Oceano's plate right now. In addition, the missing director's duties, as Director White noted, will need to be covered by the remaining directors, which may overburden the rest of you. For these reasons, we urge you to notice the vacancy for appointment, as the law allows, and we ask that you then appoint a community member who is dedicated to Oceano, brings relevant knowledge and skills, and is ready to get to work for the good of our district. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lucia?
Good evening. Lucia Casalinuovo, resident of Oceano. Yes, I do support Ms. White's concern. There will be only three of you to work and to make important decisions on important issues. So I totally agree with Kieran and Cynthia. The faster we fill those seats, those seats are there to give opportunities to residents and good-willed citizens to give their input for the life of the community, so we shouldn't waste them. And I know that there is a very good candidate, Cynthia. I support her appointment. She works very hard. She's very knowledgeable. She's a very honest person. So I support the filling up the seats as soon as possible, and I support Cynthia for that seat. Thank you.
Thank you. Eileen Villa.
Good evening, and I also want to thank you, James Colwell, for all your service here in Oceano. I'm a Oceano longtime resident since I was 2 years old, so thank you. Thank you so much. And I also echo Cynthia and Lucia's comments on the fact that we need to appoint somebody. There are a lot of issues currently in Oceano, and something that's very dear to my heart is hopefully improving with the revitalization plan, hopefully get that going, rolling. So if we could appoint someone ASAP, that would be great. And thank you all for all your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? It's not critical. Benita Frost?
Benita Ernst, Oceano,
Ernst.
California.
Sorry, yeah.
And I also wanted to add my name to the list of encouraging you to support, add somebody in the interim. Thank you, Mr. Colwell. I think that really adds another element of urgency to adding someone. So I just want to add my name and say I hope that that's what happens, and I'm not sure I'm clear what happens now that he has gone and how that's going to work. I don't know if that needs to explain now or in the future, but that'd be great.
Yeah.
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. I really prefer for people to be elected because it seems like so many times there are charges of favoritism and angry people. Of course, it seems like now you're in a bad spot, so I guess it's probably a good idea to try to fill both for now, and then the one will go up for election. And thank you, Mr. Caldwell, for your time and effort.
Anyone else?
Well, I think we should take what you suggested, post it, and move forward in trying to get the seats filled.
You still have a vote on this.
Shouldn't I recuse myself?
Not for Andrew's seat.
Uh-oh, for Andrew's seat.
Yeah, I mean, that's the major decision tonight. No.
I like the idea of making an appointment. But, you know, 3-4 months, that's a quarter of the year.
Yeah.
Do we need a motion?
I don't think you technically need a motion because... certainly based on your board's sentiment, I will proceed with working with legal counsel, underneath the terms of the statutes. And then ultimately, whether it's at the special meeting or the August 8th meeting, your board makes final determinations on what you want to do at that point in time.
Sounds okay to me.
That's fine. So you will, what's the first step?
So we have to, the first step is that when Jeff gets back, I need to confirm, what my understanding is that your board needs to appoint the replacement for Director Colwell. And then what we'll do is post that there are two vacancies, an interim vacancy, and secondly, a permanent vacancy, or a vacancy for 2+ years, and then invite individuals to submit their name. Normally there'd be some sort of a candidate statement. I didn't see that explicitly, but...
Like, is there a form that would be available to the public?
Again, I need to confirm with legal counsel, because if there's a prescribed form, we would certainly do so. But in general, it's up to the individuals who are seeking the office to decide what they want to do. Somebody could come and just inform you that they want to be appointed. Somebody else... could submit, a resume, candidate statements, and, be a lot more proactive in terms of why they want to be on the board. But I'm not aware of the ability to prescribe how they have to do so. But, again, confirm that with legal counsel and then proceed for consideration by your board at a special meeting first, which I'll work with President White as we do on special meetings.
We have like two more meetings, so we'd have another meeting in between then?
We know we cannot your board can't take any action on July 25th because the postings require requires a 15-day posting. Okay. We'll put it on the website.
You put it up immediately on the website?
Yeah, and we can put out a press release as well in order to enhance overall.
So it would come up about the last of the month and pretty close to...
Yeah, so let's see.
By the time Jeff gets back and you get...
Today's the 11th, so Jeff is going to be back, my understanding is the 16th. Mm. Let's say it takes us a day or so. And we on all this stuff, we've been confirming with the county clerk's office as well. That's, kind of important because... Jeff, as your legal counsel, is making sure to review it, but to confirm that we don't have any differing interpretations from the county clerk and the elections officer is important. But let's say that we have that all posted on the 17th. then roughly the 15 days would come up around August 1st, and maybe we'll try to schedule a meeting, a special meeting around August 3rd, that Friday. And that way, again, what I'm encouraging is your board to hear all the interested candidates so that they can come forward, but that you don't necessarily make a decision on that day and, you know, can consider what you've heard over a couple-day period and then schedule it for August 8th. Again, with the, you know, the new information with Director Colwell, again, I want to make sure to confirm all this with legal counsel, but, you know, certainly it's well within our ability to do postings and
Friday,
be able to take next steps.
Friday afternoon or might be at, like Friday at 1 o'clock might be a good time for people who might want to come present themselves.
Yeah, so, and I, you know, if we can just sort of tentatively identify Friday afternoon, August 3rd, and then that's what legal counsel and I will shoot
for.
Good
for you.
What's that? When?
Friday, August 3rd.
August, yeah.
We all three of us would have to, certainly would have to be here. Because we can't.
I'll be here.
We have to have all three of us or we can't have, we wouldn't have a quorum. Yeah.
And then, you know, and then there is always the chance that, you know, legal counsel will advise us on a point that might necessitate a special meeting even, you know, next week if there's some sort of a detail that we need to address that I'm not aware of at this point in time.
Okay.
But at least tentatively, I think that if we're planning on me working with legal counsel the beginning of next week, getting that posting out by early next week, and then tentatively planning a special meeting for August 3rd, and then again calling for the special meeting, I'll need to work with you, President White, to do so.
That would work for
that
us.
That works for me, yes.
Okay. Okay, moving on to 9B, review and discussion of the Board of Directors 2018 committee assignments with modifications as deemed appropriate.
Director, President White, members of the board, we highlighted in yellow the appointments that Director Brunet had been filling. And my thoughts at this time, especially because there's two vacancies that we're looking at, is that in the interim, I can certainly attend the Water Resource Advisory Committee meetings and the Regional Management IRWM meetings. You know, in the past, your board had me sitting on the Zone 3 Advisory Committee, and that appointment requires ratification of the Board of Supervisors, as opposed to attending, you know, at RAC and at the IRWM. I guess RAC probably does as well. I'm not sure about IRWM. But certainly, just to keep up on speed on the regional water issues, I can attend the water resource in the regional water management group meeting. When it comes to Zone 3 and the formal appointment by the Board of Supervisors, you know, really that's probably the most significant appointment that you have right now because of its formality, mm-hmm. and also because there's lead time associated with the Board of Supervisors making the formal appointment. And both the primary and the alternatives were Director Brunet and Director Colwell. The so to me, that's the biggest appointment that we should be focusing in on. Obviously, we also have two candidates that remain out of the three whose positions are up for election in November. You know, all practical purposes, if there's not an appointment to Zone 3, then we might miss one meeting, you know, with a representation at Zone 3. But I wouldn't anticipate we would miss more than one.
Is that every Thursday?
No, it's every other month, yeah.
Every other month?
Yeah.
Once a month? Or, no, every Thursday
months.
Of the month?
Every other month.
Yeah. It's on the odd months, so January, okay. March.
May.
Yeah.
July.
June, July. Yeah. So we're not going to hit this month anyhow because of the time for the Board of Supervisors to make the permanent appointment.
Where does Zone 3 meets out at the Lopez, right? Out at the
Yeah, they rotate, actually, between mm-hmm. all the agencies. So.
Yeah.
On that one, then, I guess what I'm inclined to recommend is to wait for your appointments, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, Five Cities Fire Authority is covered right now by President White. Vice President Austin's on the ad hoc aspects. So you know, whether you wanted to look at the substitution role there.
What do you mean?
Yeah. You know, in terms of the ad hoc appointments on the Five Cities Fire Authority negotiations that we had been doing, at the time we had a 5-member board. And so we had separated those duties to make sure that we didn't establish quorums. But now that we're down to 3 members, I just don't see how we would establish a quorum. So if you were interested in being the substitute at Five Cities Fire Authority in the meanwhile, that would make sense.
I see, yeah.
And just like you and
in the interim.
Yeah.
Well, I should be able to get to them.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Just until the election.
Yeah. Well, I think we just need to apply ourselves to cover what we can cover and be thankful that it's July and August and not much happens in the government in July and August as opposed to other months.
Yeah, that's right. The Water Resource Advisory Committee takes a short recess. And so with all of these, again, I would focus in on Five Cities Fire Authority. For example, is Vice President Austin interested in the alternate position? But with respect to the normal water resource stuff, I can attend, and, you know, I won't be a voting member of them. But they don't tend to have actionable items, you know, like the Sand District does, like Five Cities Fire Authority does, like Zone 3 Advisory Committee. I would just anticipate that we have a vacancy for a meeting at Zone 3.
That's fine. That sounds fine.
I think we can manage.
Yeah, I mean, I think that some of the public comment regarding the vacancies and what,
yeah.
you know, sort of compels yeah. the need to do the appointments as quickly as possible.
So you and I would...
Yeah, I'll just be the interim until we have a full board.
Yeah.
Someone else will probably want to do that. So.
Yeah, and some of these water meetings, if one of us wasn't
yeah,
available,
you could accompany me. Yeah, we could go
yeah.
together. Again,
yeah.
we just won't have a voting status for a while, but...
We'll still be represented. I mean,
yeah.
part of the time, I think the concern is that we're just there to know what's going on and
yeah.
and represent Oceano. It's not just voting. It's just...
And at Zone 3, the most pressing issue we're going to see is the revisions to the Low Reservoir Response Plan. Mm-hmm. And those will be in front of the advisory committee at some time, you know, in the near future. But each of the agencies, Oceano, Arroyo Grande, Grover, Pismo, and County Service Area 12, are all going to have to take formal actions on those items anyhow.
Yeah.
So it's going to come back to your board as a whole. So after public comment, I think that maybe the one to, you know, the biggest burning issue we have right now that really involves, you know, board participation is Five Cities Fire Authority. And then getting the appointment so we can fill the rest of these would be important.
Okay. Call for public comment. Anybody interested in commenting? I guess seeing no one come forward, we will just move forward.
Yeah, and because of the nature of Five Cities Fire Authority, I think you would want to have a formal motion on that one.
I entertain a motion. Well, I can make a motion that Linda Austin be assigned or as the alternate on the Five Cities Fire Authority Board of Directors representing Oceano.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries.
Abstain.
Okay. Opposes. It carries 3-0 with 1 abstention. Moving on, I guess, to 9C, updates on work efforts including the utility yard upgrade feasibility study, the water resource reliability plan, the local hazard mitigation plan, utility relocation associated with county projects, and county revitalization effort, other district efforts, and related public outreach with board directors as deemed appropriate. Thank you, Mr. Ogren.
President White, members of the board, and the public. Let's see, Tony, can you turn off a few of the lights just so that we have a better...
There.
Maybe a little bit... Well...
I can see it.
I can't read, though. So, there you go. I like that. If that's good for everybody else, that's good for me. Obviously, a number of work efforts that I wanted to... provide an overview on. Some have basically are wrapping up and others are just getting started. Given the timing of the election and the need for board appointments, this is a little bit more better timing than I had actually anticipated. We already had one comment that, you know, we have a lot on our plate, and that's true, so I want to run through them. So the utility yard upgrade feasibility study was recently completed by RRM, and its estimated cost of $2.9 million, which are certainly more significant than I had anticipated. And at that type of a cost, it's a little bit hard for me to envision that we're going to be able to move forward with that implementation at any time in the near future. But I don't want to make that as a concluding statement because, as we'll talk a little bit about on the Water Resource Reliability Program, the preliminary engineering is being done right now to evaluate the price tag associated with our deferred infrastructure on water. And we anticipated that the step after that for water resource reliability was to provide funding applications to the State Water Board and USDA. If we have the opportunity to get some significant grants to reduce the local costs here, then maybe we'd be able to proceed. So I would be reticent to, you know, just take it off the table altogether. Next steps then would include the grant funding applications in conjunction with the deferred infrastructure, looking at alternatives, and then I also want to touch on what one of the neighbors to the property has requested for an easement, and that's been on the table for about 2 years now, so I think we're ready to be able to proceed with that, the neighbor's request. So first I want to kind of focus in on where are we talking about. This is 19th Street. The community center is down here, Oceano Elementary, so just up, you know, north of, on 19th Street, just north of Wilmar. And individuals who are familiar with the street know that it's like half the street is a big dirt lot, or appears to be dirt. It's actually, there's some covered asphalt there. And then our yard here protrudes out into what we can just characterize as what was historically part of 19th Street. So the district owns the water yard and then all the way down to Wilmar on this one half of the road. Originally, we know that the structures, the yard's office and bathroom, and are in deplorable conditions, and we need to do something about that. And part of our hope was that in developing a conceptual design approach here, we would also be able to accomplish some, you know, street side and community amenities in terms of helping to clean up the visual impacts in the area. I mentioned that one of the property owners, which is right here, has a lot that they're interested in splitting, but they can only do that if they can get easements for driveways onto 19th Street, which historically would have been possible, except for now the district owns that strip of land. Why does that the district own this, you know, the strip of land? And from our research, it indicates that really when the Lopez system went in the late 1960s, our connection to the Lopez water supply comes right through in here. We've got a big vault, 12-inch water main, and at that time, for reasons unknown but, you know, seemingly logical, the county decided to dedicate all of that land over to us, basically abandon a portion of the road in, you know, part to make sure that if we had to get at that 12-inch line, that we had easy access to it. In any case, another, I've kind of turned this picture zoomed in a little bit here again. Now north is going to the right, but Hills Wilmar, 19th Street, the community center, Oceano Elementary, and then, you know, the big dirt patch, and then the yard. And I turned it because this is the site plan that the conceptual site plan that RRM came up with after a number of meetings with County Public Works. And out of that $2.9 million cost estimate, about $750,000 has been estimated by RRM attributable to the conditions that the county would place on us to demolish and then build new utility offices. And those conditions essentially result in reestablishing the full width of 19th Street in this section, which would allow for some on-street parking. They let us go to the minimum lane width here, but still reversing much of the land that they gave us in the late 1960s. And so it's with a lot of these curb and gutter and other requirements that the county would impose. That's about a $750,000 price tag. A little bit of it's hard to argue with, since those are the same conditions that they impose on private development. On the other hand, if we're not able to reconstruct or renovate the site, then it's going to be, you know, literally an eyesore for a long time into the future. We have a couple of architectural perspectives from one to three different points of view that you see here, which are then, one of them is actually right at the top of the slide, and then the other three are here. And the approach to the construction is to provide both the neighborhood look, you know, and the types of structures, not completely industrial. But given that it is a utility yard, it's not the wood framing structure. There's a lot more of the cinder block and split-faced cinder block in order to provide the sturdiness and the, you know, the strength of an industrial or a semi-industrial type of a site. When we move over to the cost estimates, which were a little bit hard to read, they're still very good because then we can start using this information to look at alternatives. So it's a little bit of a sticker shock to see in here that based on square footage of about 1,120 for the basic offices and 750 for the shop building, but a construction cost of $600 a square foot. And that is really the high end of what we would look at. And in discussions with the architect, certainly he acknowledged that for alternative locations, that commercial cost per square footage on private construction, he said it would be about $200 to $300 a square foot. When it comes to governmental structures, because of prevailing wage requirements, it would be more like $300 to $400 a square foot. And then, of course, module units would help reduce that cost even further. So I haven't had a chance to go through all these line items yet and to say what cost components here would be applicable to other sites. But I certainly think that that's part of the alternatives that we need to be looking at, not immediately. And so where's the alternative sites? And, you know, really the other land that the district owns is between here and the corner over there on 13th Street. So repurposing the old fire station, you know, could be an option. Obviously, the place has come to your board and has requested consideration for the use of that facility for other purposes, which could include things that are recreational related for the kids and, you know, some of the others in Oceano. Besides the old fire station, there's plenty of land where there could be the construction of a field crew office between the old fire station and the sheriff's substation where we have the water yard. What would that avoid? That would avoid all the curb, gutter, and sidewalk requirements because those already exist. And we could, you know, potentially look at structures that would be, you know, less expensive than the $600 per square foot. But still, when we're looking at a $2.9 million cost estimate right now, $750,000 attributable to the county conditions, that gets us down to about 2.2. You know, certainly we can get those numbers down even further. But whether it's $1.5 million plus or minus is a little bit hard to exactly pinpoint. Again, I think that the best course of action right now is to simply continue to work on our deferred infrastructure to identify what our grant and loan application will be for the water pipelines that are in the ground that need to be replaced. And then working with the federal and state funding agencies, find out what type of opportunity might exist for replacing the structures at the water yard. And if those opportunities really don't prevail, then we turn to the alternatives of the, you know, the property that we have adjacent to the sheriff's substation. I do want to talk a little bit, though, with respect to the old fire station. And again, Damon came today to talk about their formation of a 501c3. And on that work effort, Carrie and I did meet with them earlier in the week. And utilizing the old fire station for some of the intent that they presented to you at the last meeting, to me, kind of identifies two different areas that we need to work on. One area is simply working with legal counsel to identify what types of contractual arrangements would be necessary between the district and the place in order to have a nonprofit occupy the facilities and help at least with some recreational programs for the community. And most importantly, the place has talked about the desire to use volunteers in order to do the work that's necessary so that the old fire station can be used for their intended purpose. And because, again, it's a governmental structure, it's normally subject to prevailing wage. Well, there are provisions in the statutes where volunteers can be utilized. One of the questions is, if there's volunteers, can the nonprofit hire, you know, get the volunteers together, or does the CSD need to get the volunteers together? And then, of course, there's all sorts of issues associated with workman's comp, liability protection. And so this issue of how would we develop an agreement with the place is really a burden on legal counsel and your general manager to work through. The second area that would need to be addressed is what's required associated with to get an occupancy permit for that structure. And that, when we met with Darcy and Damon, is an area that I indicated that I think that they would need to research, that they would need to meet with county planning and talk about, you know, what's the implications of if school children go into the building? Are there different implications if kids go in there versus if the kids don't go in there? As an essential governmental facility or Most all is the county planning department is going to take the position that if it's a public building, then it's called an essential public facility, and it has different code requirements associated with it. So would those code requirements require an earthquake retrofit to the building or not? Because if an earthquake retrofit was required on that structure, that itself could deem the proposal infeasible. So the basic thought is to sort of segregate the responsibilities. Legal counsel and I would look at the mechanics of how would we what would we need to do in order to develop an agreement with the nonprofit, and then have them take the lead on working with county planning in order to address code issues associated with obtaining an occupancy permit. Would there be parking? You know, what would the parking requirements be, and how would those satisfied? Now, in order to get there, the thought was, well, do we need to have just a really simple feasibility agreement with the place? Part of the idea is, why would, you know, the county entertain a lot of lengthy discussions with these individuals if they don't have any arrangements with the district to even consider the feasibility? It's common for planning departments to say, well, we'll talk about it as soon as you submit your permit application. And, you know, it's like, well, we're in a catch-22 then. We don't know if we want to submit a permit application if we don't think this thing is feasible. So our thoughts were to, you know, to, again, after legal counsel gets back and targeting August 8th, not July 25th, is just to put together a simple little agreement that says, a non-binding agreement for your board's consideration that says we're going to address the feasibility of this together and segregate the details in there, and that at least that way county planning, and we should engage with Supervisor Compton's office as well, understands that, you know, we have an agreement to address the feasibility with the place. And that's sort of the general direction that, you know, again, the place, they did a presentation, your board was generally receptive. That's, you know, the direction I would head in that for subsequent board consideration. Unless you don't like the idea, and then I'll stop. Then I want to address, so this is the property next to the existing water yard, and it's a little bit of a you know, odd-shaped property, but this is where the existing dwelling is that's right next to the water yard. And they have a flag lot because right now they have access to Wilmar right in here. And what the property owner wants to be able to do is split. But in order to be able to split and meet the minimum lot size requirements, they're looking for easements onto 19th Street. Well, it would be really convenient for the property owner if we were able to move full steam ahead with upgrading this site. But because there's significant uncertainty associated with that, and again, this has been in front of your board, my thought was just to sit down then with County Public Works, who sets the conditions for road improvements and whatnot, and the property owner, the property owner's architect, and to gain a better understanding of what type of conditions the county might impose on that property owner. Because certainly the county will require them to do curb, gutter, and sidewalk through the frontage of their property here. But what that might look like is really going to be up to the property owner and the county to try to work through. We want to make sure that we reserve all rights so that we have access to our yard as we currently have. And then it just is a matter of whether or not the property owner thinks that it's feasible for them to move forward based on the county conditions. If the property owner thinks it's basically feasible at that point in time, before your board could take any formal action, we'd need a surveyor's description of the easement. We need to look at what's the value of the easement, because you know your obligation is arm's length transactions. One of the concepts that we talked about, though, is that if they have there's some value here to the easement, how might, instead of asking for cash, how might that property owner then do some of the other improvements to make 19th Street look better? Certainly there's been some discussions about community gardens. Would this be an area then that with some basic improvements might work out to be a good community garden. I'm not sure, but I want to make sure that that's on the table. And with its close proximity to both the community center and Oceana Elementary School, that's something that might work out well. But, you know, the basic idea is that now that the RRM feasibility study has been done and we understand county conditions, it's time to, you know, turn the effort and to see whether or not we can accommodate the private property owner without giving up any district rights and then hopefully being able to do something nicer along 19th Street than what currently exists.
I have a stupid question. Do we need to retain that area along 19th Street? Could we give it back? Is there any way we could give it back to the county and let them deal with it?
I don't think that's a stupid question at all. I think that's a really good question, right, where we just basically say, look, we don't want the property anymore. And it's.
Do we need it for anything?
No, we have to have the ability to access it to repair our pipeline that's through it. And we'll certainly take that approach. I mean, that's what's great about having these discussions. I hadn't thought about it. I do know that the county has, in order, if we were to give something to the county, nobody can give anything to any public agency without that public agency agreeing to accept it.
Yeah, I understand
right?
that.
But certainly getting Supervisor Compton into the discussions and everything might be a good approach. One of the, that $750,000 in costs related to having to pave, you know, that portion of 19th Street and putting the curb gutter and sidewalk in that portion of 19th Street.
What is the actual size measurement of it?
Pardon me?
What is the actual measurement?
Of that length right in there?
The land you're talking about. How big is that?
Gosh, you got two structures there and two more.
The section that you're talking about.
6120, 180.
300.
I mean, it's a couple hundred feet, yeah.
Yeah.
The section you're talking about that we even give back to the. I'm talking about the.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to. I haven't done the calculations.
300 feet by the width of, what, 10 feet?
Yeah, one.
10 feet? 12 feet.
Is there some use that we could.
I would guess it's more like 20 or 30 feet wide.
Oh, okay.
Maybe even 40. The standard old, you know, Oceano, the 1800 subdivision, 80 foot.
That's
right.
80-foot roads
for
horses.
So this could be as much as 40, maybe not. But okay. So again, a good question, and I will make sure in meeting with the property owner and County Public Works to talk about the fact that look, we want to dedicate it back to the county.
Or could we make it into a fitness park?
Well, I think that.
That's what I was getting at. How big is it that we could deed it back to the county and they would, what we've been working on trying to get a.
So if you deed it back to the county, I don't think that the county will be as proactive in using the property for a local purpose as compared to what your board would, right? Being able to set up a community garden or doing something fitness oriented, that's something that, you know, the county would really look for the CSD to do. The county just simply isn't set up to do some
right,
of those local programs and everything.
Well, could we do something else there, like a little pocket park or a community garden or?
I think that those are things that are.
And we would not have to do the $750,000 then. Is that what?
So the $750,000 is based on Public Works. Current implementation of their road standards, right? Curb gutter and sidewalk standards. And we've heard it from a number of other people in the community, especially people who have corner lots, that those curb gutter and sidewalk standards are pretty onerous at times. Well, maybe the strategy here is that to develop an alternative use for that stretch of land and get to be established as an alternative use would be one way to say, hey, you don't want to make us do the curb gutter and sidewalk and the road improvements because here we've developed a community amenity that, you know, everybody's behind, the type of thing that we need. We need either more pocket parks
or community
gardens and those things. And
I think that's something we should pursue, that we would find a use for it, not just have paved, if it's big enough to do something worthwhile. I think that we should absolutely.
The road doesn't need to be widened, really. I mean, people drive through there. I
There is some need for, I mean, we have to work out the idea that there's parking impacts because of the lay of the land right now. One of the recent events was there was some testing going on for high school. I don't know if they were doing SAT tests or what kind of tests they were doing at the community center. But that whole area was just packed with cars, right? And it is an indication that you're close to Oceano Elementary, you're close to the community center. When they have events and there's not enough parking, then that starts to get used. So I do think that we always have to keep in mind at least figuring that there needs to be parallel parking there. But again, that's a concept we can work with. Let me go back a slide, a couple slides. See, here where the county was looking at us providing it back the full width of 19th Street, then you have some parallel parking here, but they were willing to give up any parallel parking in this area. Well, the truth is that there's probably some room for community gardens or some amenities here and still have some parallel parking that would line up with our existing, you know, fencing. If you could imagine just a little bit in here to do some parallel parking, and then you still have some room for... it seems to me like a community garden is the idea that might be the best option there, because it's a long, thin piece of land where you could have garden plots next to each other. Okay, so I've got some general ideas to work for, move forward with on that.
I have one more question. Being it's a dirt spot now, do we have any responsibility to ultimately have that road widened? Is that our responsibility at all?
No.
Because that road serves the people enough now on both sides so they can get through and everything. Fire trucks can get in there and everything.
Yeah, that's correct. It's tight, and if I lived across the street from it, I'd want to see something improved. But we don't have any obligations. That's where, if we wanted to get building permits to, you know, renovate and redevelop the site, that's when the county's current conditions would kick in, and then they would impose that requirement on us.
Yeah.
But if we're simply, you know, not going to do that $2.9 million project, then the county doesn't have the ability to impose those requirements. So they're really conditions of development or redevelopment of that site. Again, as we move forward and we look at these different options, working with Supervisor Compton and the Board of Supervisors as a whole is also within the realm of possibility to look for exemptions to some of those conditions, because as it is right now, it's an eyesore.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
And if the imposition of the conditions prevents us from implementing anything, then that eyesore is going to continue into the indefinite future. But if some of those conditions are waived and we can do something else, that's good, right? A community garden rather than total widening of the road and curb gutter and sidewalk, then we might help, you know, bring down our costs, do the improvements, and, you know, get to what one of those traditional win-win situations are.
Yeah.
So what I really appreciate about the RRM work, it was their diligence with working with County Public Works and making sure that they could understand exactly what they would have to do if all those conditions are imposed. And that's really the starting point then.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Moving on then to the Water Resource Reliability Program, a quick recap. Phase 1 grant was for about $198,000, and that was from the State Water Board. Phase 2 grant of $177,000 is for disadvantaged communities from the Department of Water Resources, with the Phase 1 being essentially studies, and then Phase 2 is proceeding with designs on high-priority waterline replacement projects. The leak detection and management plan is the project where we've already done a bunch of the leak detection, and we don't have as leaky pipes as we had originally thought. But the next effort, which is ongoing, is to identify all the lines that really need to be replaced. We have a good understanding of them, and the consultants working on it is Cannon Associates, and for them to develop the cost estimates associated with what it's going to take to replace the deferred infrastructure. So no good pictures on that. That's just the update. It should be done in the next few months. Similarly, on the third bullet point, the recycled water injection study, Cleith Harris has been doing that work, and they've been, good understanding of what PISMO is doing on the recycled water project. Central Coast Blue is now what it's called. And most recent efforts on that is when the hydrogeologists want to look at drillers' logs in area in order to gain an understanding of soils and the depths, because that's always the best information. Is somebody drills a well and they do borings and you find out, what different soils exist at various depths. In California, I think it's the only state in the nation where that information is confidential. So we recently had to do a bunch of waivers and make sure that that information could be released from the county to the consultants, and the consultants then have to work under strict confidentiality with that information. They're not allowed to release those details. What they do is they look at the soils condition. They can do analysis. They can come up with conclusions. They just can't disclose what driller logs are for any of the particular wells that had been drilled in the area. So we've jumped through that hoop so that they can get the information recently and are proceeding on the work efforts. What I wanted to do today was really focus in on the low-impact design plan, and it's somewhat of concept. So what's been accomplished there? Well, the objective was to be able to identify where is the stormwater flows on the surface in Oceano, and where might a low-impact development projects be implemented. LID, low-impact development, generally says we need to catch this water through drainage swales or infiltration basins and get it back into the groundwater basin rather than having it flow out to the ocean as floodwaters. When any community gets as much development as Oceano, I think the old executive director of the regional board told me that something like 15 to 30% of a watershed gets developed, you've pretty much had significant impacts on stormwater flows at that point in time. And it's certainly the development, that we've had historically didn't recognize all of those impacts. So Cannon has gone through and they've evaluated. This diagram shows where they've developed flow diagrams of where they see the surface flows of stormwater. And what they also did is I understood and identified this is 13th Street, and then this is down, 17th Street. So these are the two areas where the county's drainage project is going to help mitigate some of the flooding we see. And, of course, anytime we have significant rain, 13th Street and Highway 1 gets closed. In fact, we have people driving through our parking lot because we're above the flood area, and they'll just come in and then they'll go access 13th Street. We become a little mini highway right here during storm events. We should maybe put a toll road in and collect a charge for something.
Water pipe money, water pipe money.
Yeah. So the idea was the Cannon's concepts, which again we liked in their proposal, was not to just identify the flow major flow areas, but those that then contribute to the Highway 1 areas that are flood prone. So they've completed that analysis, and what it's resulted in is the identification of the LID opportunity areas. So where they wanted to kind of hesitate a little bit right now is in identifying opportunity areas, but they didn't want to put forward, and I agreed with them 100%, any conceptual designs for these specific areas, because people can, look at a conceptual design and maybe they don't like it, and all of a sudden it creates a lot of, negativity toward the overall proposal. So they are astute in understanding how finicky the public can be. The American public can be finicky. And so they've identified the LID opportunities areas, and then they've come up with some conceptual designs that don't apply to any of the areas specifically, but just to show us. And then their subsequent work effort We'll go in and address some of those details on these sites more specifically. So, for example, if they thought that scenario A would work at a particular 13th and 17th Street, they don't want to make, because they still have some more homework to do. You know, where are the driveway accesses? How many people are living there? What would be the impacts of doing an LID project there? Even when they conclude their report, we need to take it with the idea that these are concepts, right? And we still will need to work with the property owners and the neighbors to work through those concepts and find out what they might be agreeable to. What's the end product is going to be? The end product, again, is to try to take advantage of grant opportunities, because certainly there has been a lot of money through granting agencies that's moving towards these LID stormwater capture, recharging the groundwater basins. And what we find ourselves in Oceano is in a somewhat of an interesting situation, because we don't have, the CSD doesn't have any authority over drainage and flood control. And so normally this type of stuff you turn and say, this is the county's responsibility. And we do want to make sure that recommendations go forward to the county on LID and some of these conceptual designs. The county's working with a 2004 drainage study, and that drainage study really came out before these low-impact development and recharge concepts really started to, you know, gain momentum. And so the county's 2004 study heavily relies, again, on curb, gutter, and sidewalk, and we think that some of these concepts should be incorporated into the county's standards as options for, you know, traditional curb, gutter, and sidewalk. So it's going to have some recommendations for the county at the end of the day. But we do have the water resource responsibility, and so we do have the ability to implement projects that are for the purpose of groundwater recharge. And what it ends up being is that we have this sort of overlapping jurisdiction with the county, because they have drainage and flood control, which could implement, you know, drainage projects that recharge the groundwater basin. But we have water resource who can implement recharge, you know, projects for the groundwater basin. And, you know, clearly if we're able to take the lead on some grant applications, then, you know, we're going to be furthering the community's interest a little bit more proactively than we might expect from the county. But still, obviously, coordination with them is going to be important. They have the road right-of-ways. They have the street right-of-ways. They would ultimately have to approve anything that might be done. So with all that, some of the concepts then. And this one here is one way. So again, in Oceano, we have these 80-foot right-of-ways, which are really kind of wide because it's a you know, late 1800 subdivision. As a little bit of trivia, the question goes, well, why do you have 80-foot right-of-ways in these 1800 subdivisions? And the answer is because that's how much right-of-way you needed to turn a horse and buggy around, right? No three-point turns with horse and buggies, apparently. So, you know, with one-way streets, one of the things that we've talked about, and they recognize that, you know, traffic circulation around Oceano Elementary is going to be important. If you're going to consider one-way streets, traffic circulation anywhere is important. And there's a certain amount of reticence that people have to one-way streets. So community outreach would be really important. But we're also talking about a significant amount of right-of-way then that could be dedicated to, you know, again, this is where you would have stormwater come in. So, the elevations would have to be below grade, below street level. In storm events, the water goes into these areas and then perks back down into the ground. Good thing we have a lot of sand that helps with infiltration. The other aspect of these types of LID improvements is the beautification side of it. Challenges are landscaping related. How would we, you know, make sure to maintain that landscaping? So there's one concept there, including a lot of trees. We see the driveway approaches. What would the parking impacts be? So another approach here is same thing, one-way streets, but then addressing some of the parking issues. Now, if we have a street where we have more apartments and there's plenty of on-site parking associated with the apartments, then that's a little bit easier. If we have a one-way street where there's just not sufficient parking, then, you know, setting in some parking into there. What this legend shows is that they would use permeable pavers even in a parking area in order to try to improve infiltration and stormwater recharge. So that's a second one-way option. This one is sort of the LID component, which is you just have a lot of area on the one side of the street to maximize your stormwater recharge. And then they also start working with some options that maintain a two-way circulation, you know, two-way streets. And what we can anticipate is this is going to be the high-end cost estimate. And the reason why it's the high-end cost estimate is because then those infiltration basins go underneath the roads. And that's common in the construction of apartment buildings today, where the lot where you're constructing apartments or condos is either taken up with the buildings or it's taken up with, you know, driveways and parking. And so it's common today that somebody who develops a multifamily apartment or condo that they have to put the infiltration basin to address their on-site impacts, and they have to put it underneath the parking lot. All is a little bit easier when you're dealing with raw land and building something new. All is more expensive when you're dealing with existing streets and having to work around existing utilities. Pretty much in all cases, though, the opportunities areas that they identified are the side streets, where, you know, we have the side streets where there's maybe one or two parcels for a block versus the streets where, you know, there's a house every 50 feet. So they have been concentrating on the side streets for capture in order to minimize any, you know, primarily parking impacts, because when it really comes down to it, these projects end up being, you know, for the most part, really good projects, both with stormwater recharge as well as reducing flooding and beautification aspects. So that's our status on the LID work efforts.
Do we get much value at all from the stormwater ponds that they have now? I know there's several in the community.
Value in terms of stormwater recharge?
Yeah.
You know, yes, I'm sure. How much? I don't know. When those ponds and those recharge basins are developed, what they really are is they're developed in order to mitigate the impacts of, you know, the hardscape that's developed by, you know, whatever we're building. We're building a house.
Or a track.
Yeah. And so they're project specific. And so the benefits that they have are really to offset the negative impacts of that development and to try to keep everything neutral. These concepts here are all about trying to address impacts that were created, you know, decades ago, and then how do we, because decades ago we didn't have to worry about this stuff, right? I mean, it wasn't part of conditions. And how do we do community projects to try to encourage groundwater recharge? And again, for Oceano, I think one of the nice things is just to promote beautification and improve community amenities again.
Yeah, decades ago we just flooded all the time too.
I've seen some of those pictures, especially before the levees were built.
Yeah. Low water town. Thank you.
Let's see. So then just to recap some of the other updates. So local hazard mitigation plan, as Tony mentioned, utilities crews have been meeting with Category 5 in order to address our project specific. We had the kickoff meeting. I know that some of the individuals in the audience today were there. You know, some of the directors were there. The overall goal, again, is to identify the hazards within the community, to understand who's the responsible agency for responding to those hazards, because in an unincorporated community, lots of different agencies are involved. And community outreach, so that if flooding happens, people know, or other emergencies, where are our shelters. And so more to, you know, talk about as that proceeds. Utility relocations required by the county. The two are Air Park Drive Bridge Replacement Project and then the Oceano Drainage Project. And Tony, you had a meeting today on the Oceano Drainage Project. I imagine that they had just given the update that they're trying to bid this fall, go to construction in early 2019. And as I indicated in my staff report, we should have an updated agreement with the county on your agenda for July 25th. As a reminder, we, our utilities, our water lines, sewer lines are in county roads for the most part with county permission. There's a few that we predated the county, and so when a relocation needs to happen, then they have to pay for the relocation. On the drainage project, there's one versus the other six or seven we have to pay for. But again, they long established court cases that legal counsel went over with the board probably now a couple years ago. But yeah, when the county demands that we move our facilities in order to accommodate their efforts, then we're required to do so unless we have a prior standing, or if we beat them to the public easement. And we already have, I don't know, $100,000 or so set aside for the drainage project, but we're going to have to be updating that in the near future as well. Follow similar procedures as we did for Air Park Drive, which is to independently bid the project as well as incorporate it into the county's bid so that we can make sure we get the best price possible. Tony mentioned that on the Air Park Drive project, there was a sewer system overflow that was caused by the county's contractor. In addition to reviewing that SSO and the crew's response, so what we do on sewer system overflows is that Tony and the guys are responsible for all the regulatory notifications and the responses. And we're obviously talking as these things are going on. But at the end of the day, my responsibility is to go back and look at what they did in comparison to our sewer system management plan. But for the Air Park Drive Bridge Replacement Project, there's another step too, and that is that in the county's environmental documents, they have emergency responses that are required. And so now, since they damaged our sewer line, I need to go into the county's construction documents and to look at, did they comply with their emergency response plans for that incident as they've laid out in their environmental documents. Especially important to make sure that, you know, again, everything's being done and notifications are being done as they should be. But also because some of our local relations. So Dina Bellman with State Parks called me today, and she said, hey, what went on? We weren't ever told. And I said, well, Dina, we've responded to the regulatory agencies as we're required to do. I go, but you must have provided a right of use, right of entry permit to the county. And she goes, we did. And I go, and have you reviewed that? She goes, I'm going to. So, you know, it's a bit of a hornet's nest, but again, it's our sewer system. We have to look at both, did we respond to regulatory agencies as we were supposed to, and then did the other parties who affected our sewer system respond pursuant to their emergency response plans as they were supposed to?
How many of us are going to get sued or get fined over that?
Well, you know, we had a similar incident 2 years ago where there's a backup, not in the 2010 backup, but there was a backup out of the sanitation district that caused an overflow into one of a ditch, did not get into the lagoon. And yeah, again, the regulatory agencies looked to the violator. So we didn't get, they didn't even talk to us about fining in that situation. And in this situation, all of the correspondence and emails have been directed at the county and the county contractor's responsibilities. So I would not anticipate any enforcement actions coming against us. But part of the importance there is to demonstrate that we're following up on, we're gaining an understanding of what was done and how, you know, everybody responded to it. So,
thank you. Another overtime moment.
Yeah. You know, I do want to back up. I missed a note on the... Well, no, I'll catch it under revitalization. So, very next thing. So, county revitalization efforts. And, again, we heard a little bit of public comment about that. And I've had the opportunity to meet with county planning recently with members of the Oceano Beach Community Association. And part of that also prompted, you know, your board's comments to state parks for the economic analysis associated with the state parks EIR and what would be economic implications associated with that. So then the bigger picture was, well, okay, what is it that the county might be doing towards revitalization efforts? And so we wanted to get a little bit of an update. And from a public works perspective, which I did separately, we know that they are programming the Highway 1 improvements. But it's dependent on maintenance of the gas taxes. That if in November the gas taxes are repealed, then the county tells us then doing the Highway 1 revitalization improvements is there's no timeline that they can provide where they think that they can get that done. But what beyond the specific revitalization efforts? And we know that the Oceano Advisory Committee is looking at it as well. So, you know, the OAC is really the primary conduit on revitalization efforts with the county. But there is this issue of landscape maintenance. This is the general issue that the more that the community betters and the better the economic development, then, of course, the impact of water rate increases or the ability to fund deferred infrastructure is better for us. But what I wanted to bring to your board's attention is in the revitalization and the Highway 1 efforts, there's a Union Pacific Railroad offer of dedication on the west side of Highway 1. With the which the county really wants to see Caltrans accept. And it's important for Caltrans to accept it so that the county has the best flexibility of implementing the Highway 1 improvements and the revitalization project. The report from the County Public Works is that Caltrans is very reticent, that they don't want to accept it at all. Even though the county is the one who's trying to move forward with the Highway 1 improvements. And part of the kink there is landscape maintenance. And I've talked with your board about it once before, but we know that the county, like community parks and some other local amenities, really doesn't have the budget to deal with some of these issues on a community basis, because if they do it in Oceano, they have to do it in San Miguel and Shandon. In a whole lot of other areas where they're struggling just to keep up with their road maintenance. And so like in San Miguel and Los Osos, community associations stepped up to actually help implement. So you end up having sort of a string of agreements where Caltrans would look to the county to be responsible for that extra easement in terms of any landscaping maintenance. The county would look to, like, the CSD, and then we would turn around and look to, you know, some of the nonprofits that might be here. I think it's important because 2020, the offer of dedication was provided in 1995. There's a general rule that they last for 25 years, and if they're not accepted, then they expire. And I know that there's exceptions to that because I've seen the exceptions, you know, in some situations in the past. But that's really the burden of, you know, is to try to get Caltrans to, you know, really work with the county and the community in order to accept that offer of dedication so that the best options for revitalization can move forward. When I look at the county's, you know, they're about 30% done on their design. The one item in the design that I just don't see that makes me wonder if they should incorporate it is the traffic calming. And, you know, traffic calming sometimes can just be a slight meander in a road, and that 10-foot offer of dedication could be critical because if they can push the road just a little bit further west and make those sidewalks on the east side, like in front of the Melodrama, in front of the place, just a little bit wider. Well, we know that, you know, wider sidewalks tends to improve, you know, the walkability of a community. It improves storefronts. So the feedback from County Public Works is that, support letters would be great. And, of course, support letters that not just come from the CSD, but come from other, the nonprofits, community associations. Caltrans sometimes needs to get pressured from multiple angles in order to get them to act. So, to me, that's one of the big questions here: is the board willing to, have meetings, agenda items in the future with respect to coordinating landscaping maintenance and helping to rally some comments to Caltrans that offer of dedication really needs to be accepted.
I'd support it. I don't know. I think it needs to come up on the agenda sometime.
Okay.
When we have a lighter meeting, maybe. Not in the immediate future.
Yeah, I think it needs to be relatively soon.
Yeah.
Just because the county has had some recent meetings with the Caltrans where the Caltrans was, the words used by the county official to me were different than I can use in a public setting. So let's just put it with that. They have a certain amount of frustration going on, and I think we need to support them in these revitalization efforts. I also, after this slide, I have my final slide, but I want to talk a little bit about revitalization in another context in a minute as well. But that's bigger picture and arguably not as well underneath the umbrella of the CSD as is, landscaping maintenance and how can we help the county to get that offer of dedication approved. The emergency generator project should be on the board's agenda in the relatively near future, and I've probably been saying that for the last 3 years, but I promise it's true now. The most recent thing, we had to hire Earth Systems to do some soils analysis, and it's a little bit frustrating because I think county planning and their determination that a generator on a concrete pad outside of a building is quote-unquote an essential public facility, which requires a whole bunch of... Supervisor Compton's office was super helpful for us in talking to the planning department and kind of getting them to not be as onerous as they were originally going to be. But we still needed to hire Earth Systems to support the structural engineer's calculations and yada, yada, yada. So we just did that, and I would anticipate that, again, we'll be on the agenda for proceeding with procurement and bidding on it within the next couple months. Sorry, Jim. That's and then public outreach. So on Friday, I meet with County Planning and Habitat for Humanity because we've been working on an event that's hopefully going to be in August that would be at the community center. And the basic idea is that we want to use the community center for like a general session, maybe one in the morning and one in the afternoon at maybe 10 and 1 o'clock, and to talk about the various efforts that are going on, more abbreviated than my version tonight, because then in talking with the school district, is to have a number of the classrooms at Oceano Elementary then open up so that we can have the water resource reliability program in one room, Category 5 in the local hazard mitigation plan in another room, where Habitat for Humanity was a little bit concerned about this multidisciplinary community outreach event because they were concerned that what they do would be kind of overshadowed by, well, the reality is we've got a lot of stuff that needs to move forward in the community. So the response to Habitat was, well, your focus groups then could be at the community center, right? If we have the general sessions at the community center, and then you just stay there, and that way people will know where you're at, and nobody has to go across the street to, you know, go into classrooms. But it was really successful in one of the events that we did on the Los Osos Wastewater Project, because we also included, there's a classroom where the nonprofit and the NGOs, non-governmental organizations. So One Cool Earth, for example, has been doing a lot of work at the school district, and I've reached out to them a little bit in order to see if they would be interested, and of course they are. We've got, you know, some of the other NGOs that are developing in the community, and I think it would be a really good opportunity for classrooms to be set up that address some of the governmental services that are going on right now, as well as some of the other efforts. PG&E recently contacted us because they're also trying to do additional outreach, and it looks like they're willing to grant us, depending on which program, between $1,000 and $5,000 to help with community outreach and publication of materials. My only concern right now is that, you know, again, Habitat for Humanity was concerned about making it too many reasons to be there and that they would be lost and overshadowed. I just have a hard time believing that would be the case because they're such a big draw. You know, they work throughout the nation. They probably even work outside of the country. I don't know. But they're always a big draw. I think One Cool Earth is going to be a good draw because they work with the Oshie Elementary. But that's kind of the feedback that I'm going to give them on Friday, is that we really need to try to make it as broad as possible. Because the individual events, Oceano is a tough community to get people to engage in, mm-hmm. right? And so if you have a multidisciplinary with some good draws like Habitat and One Cool Earth, then I think we have a better chance for good community participation.
Perhaps Habitat could bring Jimmy Carter in.
He'd probably be a good draw.
Yeah.
For people, for us who are old enough to remember him, right? And then on the sort of the other related effort to the revitalization plan. So when we're meeting with county planning, and this is not the greatest slide blown up, but they're right now embarking on Envision Avila, which is to take and develop a community plan for Avila. And when I hear people talk about revitalization in Oceano, to me this is where we, you know, if the Board of Supervisors can do this for Avila, then they should be able to do it for Oceano as well. And Megan Martin with the County Planning Department has been really wonderful. I've gotten to know her. We've met with some of the representatives of Oceano Beach Community Association, and she's clearly a proactive individual. Also very clear in both her enthusiasm, as well as it's the community's obligation to get it on the Board of Supervisors' agenda. You know, that if we think that this component of revitalization for Oceano in terms of long-range planning and a community plan, it's really going to have to start with getting recommendations from Oceano Advisory Committee and the CSD, and working with our district supervisor in order to get this thing. The County Planning Department basically has a three-tier approach to their projects. Tier three are the items that are on the back burner, and simply they don't know, you know, good ideas that haven't been slotted. Tier two are the projects that are done well. They have gaps in doing tier one. So tier one are obviously things associated with state mandates, whether it's a housing mandate or, you know, requirements associated with the general plan. But this type of effort, which is a discretionary project, is something that we just need to make sure that it can get up as a priority on the Board of Supervisors' agenda for Oceano. And, I looked at the revitalization plan, obviously, a few years ago, and I was a little bit overly critical of it, and mostly because of the name. What it was, you know, looking at Highway 1 and how Highway 1 might be modified. But it didn't address things like zoning and planning and some of the other things that can be really important for economic development. There's also something new that I think this type of a work effort needs to really highlight for the private investors. And again, this is something that was brought to our attention from the Oceano Beach Community Association, is that Oceano has been designated as an opportunity zone. And what that is that's IRS regulation. So at the end of 2017, as part of the tax measures that went through, opportunity zones got incorporated into IRS regulations, and then each of the states were required to identify what their opportunity zones were, and they had to be disadvantaged communities. And so the state of California identified Oceano as well as, you know, number of different communities throughout California. And what it does is it provides tax benefits for avoidance of, that's right, avoidance, not evasion. Evasion of taxes is bad. You go to jail for that, right? But you can legally avoid taxes by doing it in compliance with IRS regulations. And so investments in Oceano, under these particular code sections, can help defer capital gains and even potentially eliminate them if investments are made for a 10-year period. And so, again, reaching back to the community outreach effort, you know, somebody who might be interested in talking about the tax implications, even though I'm a CPA, you know, I don't have an active license, so I really can't get into the details of expressing opinions as CPAs. But clearly, there's tax advantages associated with capital gains in order to promote investments in disadvantaged communities. I did read one article that on the contrary side said it's just going to promote gentrification and those kind of issues. But, you know, to the extent that it promotes investments in Oceano, I think that those are things that need to be better understood, and, you know, local investors and people need to recognize that investing in Oceano has some real tax advantages to it. So I wanted to bring that up as well. And as I continue in meeting with county planning and looking at this issue, I think that working with the board members on the Oceano Advisory Committee would probably be the next step on that as well, because OAC is the lead for advising the Board of Supervisors on local planning efforts. But again, as a local government agency, the board also looks to the CSDs, and I'm sure that Avila Beach CSD had been active in promoting the development of a community, you know, envision Avila. And again, if the Board of Supervisors can do it for Avila, then it seems like they should be able to do it for Oceano as well.
Yes.
And that concludes my update. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
A lot of good stuff.
What you been doing lately?
Yeah.
Lots of good stuff. And now I ask for public comment if the board doesn't have anything else to say.
I have some. I have some notes on the.
Go ahead.
The yard. So the. You talked about if it didn't work out at the location now about the firehouse being up. So what would happen to the yard? Aren't there tanks up there? I mean, what would we do up there?
Oh, well, the yard is still, you know, we have the connection to the Lopez and state water supplies there. We have our, I don't know, Tony, I call it the barn, but, you know, he's got some. The big storage unit is in good shape. We've got the storage tanks. We've got some wells.
So we'd still use
it. And we would still need to use that for storage of a lot of supply. The challenge there is really having the guys split, you know, from the yard. So whatever we might, as an alternative, develop here, it's got to be sufficient for their trucks, you know, all their light tools, the stuff that they use on a daily basis.
I'd like
this. And the 19th Street yard would have to be, you know, reserved for, you know, when they're moving a lot of dirt around.
Right, yeah.
And some, really, the storage of the heavier equipment that's used less often. So I'd have to work with Tony and the guys in order to figure out how we would do that. But
well, I really like the plan, the building. I think it's a really nice plan. It'll look really good up in that area. So I'm hoping that we can move forward on that.
That would be great. I think that would be by far the best case scenario.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's just the price tag.
And then on here you were talking about the volunteers. Well, they would have to do all that. We wouldn't have anything to do. They would just additionally insure us for everything.
And that would definitely be the preferable approach.
Yeah.
The key there is getting into the statutes, because where the statutes allow us to have volunteers, does it require the local agency to hire, does it require that the volunteers are working on behalf of the local agency, or can the volunteers work on behalf of a nonprofit?
Well, they'd have to be working on them if they're the.
It would seem like we could, because you see a lot of other events, trail cleanups, where EcoSlow was coordinating with volunteers and then doing things on behalf of the city of San Luis Obispo. So I agree that that would be the best approach, but again, it's something that legal counsel and I have to confirm on.
Other than that, it's a great update. Thank you.
Sure.
Call for public comment. I'd like to come forward.
Cynthia Rupp-Logle again with the Oceana Beach Community Association. Mr. Ogren covered a lot of ground, so I took some notes too. First, on the yard, that area on 19th Street that the community services district owns. I'd urge you to keep local control of that and not give it back to the county. One of our members, Erica Andrade, has been working with the Oceana Coalition headed by Habitat for Humanity, and she could speak to this better than I can, but I will tell you what I know about potential for a community garden on that little strip that's taken up by street on this plan. Habitat for Humanity is expecting some grant funding later this year, and that is one of the locations that they have identified as a potential spot for a community garden. And it's really convenient to the school, so it would be a great opportunity for the kids to get their hands dirty and grow some vegetables, and also be a nice, beautiful spot for the community. So that's obviously something that we would like to see there, and we would hope that these plans could possibly be modified to include a feature like that. As for the storage tanks, I've driven by there. They're just big blank canvases, shall we say. We've got artists in the community. Maybe we could get some murals painted on there, like Wailing Walls or something cool like that, that would be beautiful for the community. On the LID, the stormwater capture drawings that you showed got me really excited for a couple of reasons. First, interesting fact on the horse carriage turning radius. I did not know that. But putting on my surf rider hat now, one of our programs is called Ocean Friendly Gardens, and that operates on the principles of conservation, permeability, and retention. So we have landscape experts who have been trained in those concepts who would be available to help with designing some of that landscape with native drought-tolerant plants and proper drainage swales that would capture that rainwater so it doesn't run off into the street. We're also interested in training homeowners to implement those features in their own properties. In fact, I'm going to be implementing an ocean-friendly garden at my house on 24th Street later this year, and bringing in volunteers to help do the work and learn the concepts. So I don't want to promise anything, but Surf Rider might be able to assist with some volunteers to help do that work and train people to go out and do that in their own communities. As to the Highway 1 railroad easement, putting my Oceana Beach Community Association hat back on, we would definitely be willing to work with the Community Services District to get people to do that landscape maintenance if that's an issue that's holding up Caltrans accepting that easement. And I also think traffic calming is very important, especially if we're going to have people out there doing the landscape maintenance. We want the vehicles to slow down as they're going through. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Anyone else? Okay, then I guess we need to move on to item 10, our hearing item, consideration of a recommendation to approve a resolution to collect delinquent accounts on 2018-2019 property tax bills. And do I need to ask if anybody's here to speak on that?
Yeah, I think that would be good.
Is anyone here to speak on that tonight? Don't see anybody coming forward.
So, Madam President, members of the board, this is consistent with prior years. I think, Sally, is it the seventh year or that we are collecting delinquent garbage, recycling, green waste bills on property tax bills? It's incorporated into the franchise agreement that we have with South County Sanitary Services, where for the delinquencies, the languages were required to coordinate. And essentially, it's a component of mandatory service. And I know that the first year that I was with the district, there was a member of the public who came and spoke and was, you know, didn't want to have to pay, didn't believe in mandatory service. But, you know, the reality is that in garbage and refuse collection, mandatory services in numerous communities, and it's extremely essential. What we did this year as part of our efforts to, you know, improve upon all the work that we're doing is we kind of really dug into the records of we did like a mini audit of South County Sanitary, where they sent us the billing history for each of the property owners, and we reviewed it. Initially, we could not reconcile the amounts that they had proposed, and after motivating them to get into the details, they were able to demonstrate to us how that all worked, and to our satisfaction, the dollar amounts are correct. In addition, we had a question on one of the accounts with regard to some of the charges, and they were able to adequately answer those. So, again, we did a little bit more due diligence than we've been able to do in the past, and South County Sanitary was able to demonstrate that the dollar amounts that they had proposed are all proper dollar amounts, and based on our franchise agreement with them, our recommendation is the adoption of the resolution.
Any discussion?
No. I'd like to make a motion that we adopt the resolution to collect the delinquent accounts on the 2018-19 property tax bills for the South County Sanitation District.
A second.
It's been moved and seconded. We need a roll call vote, please.
Director Vice President Austin?
Yes.
Director Angela?
Yes.
Director Colwell?
Yes.
President White?
Yes. Passes 4-0. Okay, written communication. Do we have any late written communication?
We did have in the record that I forgot to mention that part of the record is some individuals from the public who could not attend on the issue of the appointment of committee members. I apologize for the oversight of not those letters are in the record, and obviously
we have them.
Yeah,
Your
board had them, and the action or how we're proceeding are consistent with their recommendations at this time. The only other thing I got today was the 16th, I believe, is the day that I'll begin sitting down with Five Cities Fire Authority, with the general managers for Grande and Grover Beach. And my thought is to schedule for July 25th a general discussion then with your board on how that first meeting of the negotiations went, and to do some brainstorming on what your board would like to see in a new franchise agreement. You know, I've already had the opportunity to talk with our two prior reps at Five Cities Fire Authority, and I have those notes to take to the meeting too. But again, that finally got scheduled for today, and we'll be moving forward on the Five Cities Fire discussions.
Okay. Any other items to come before us?
Well, I know in terms of my upcoming priorities, the rules and regulations and policies and procedures are really moving quickly to the top of the... As we've got the consultants working on some of these other project efforts, I will be switching my priorities to policies, procedures, districts, rules, and regulations, so that's the last major sort of cleanup work that we need to do for the district. And start the recruitment of the three vacant positions of staff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sounds like a plan.
Do it?
We're probably going to also have to have a couple of minutes to celebrate our resigning board members, but we're going to get some plaques, and like we always do, and make them come back.
Okay. Okay. Do I have a motion?
Would you like to make the motion?
I move we adjourn.
I second that.
Moved and seconded. We adjourn. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Sign the checks.